Hello and welcome to the Middle East Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Middle East and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov is back in charge of Turkmenistan's government. It's been less than a year since he left office and his son Serdar took his place as president, but on January 21st, the Turkmen parliament quickly passed amendments that made a major change to the structure of Turkmenistan's government. For the first time since independence in 1991, the Turkmen president is not the center of power. That now belongs to a recreated body, the Halk Maslahati, or People's Council, which is headed by former president Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov. So what just changed and what might be some of the reasons for this striking shift of power? To discuss all this, I'm joined by Faruk Yusufi, the head of RFARL's Turkmen service, known locally as Asatlik, and Luka Ancheshi, professor of Central Asian Studies at Glasgow University and author of several books on Central Asia, including Turkmenistan's Foreign Policy, Positive Neutrality, and Consolidation of the Turkmen Regime. Thank you both for joining me today. Faruk, I'll start with you. What just happened to the structure of the Turkmen government?
They abolished brand new, like almost brand new bicameral parliament. And if you remember in 2020, they made changes to the constitution, and then they made the parliament bicameral. It was unicameral. And they used exactly the same reasoning that they used this time for abolishing it, saying that the time is not standing still, everything is moving, and we have to adapt to the changes of the time, to the winds of the time. And this time they did the same thing. And back in 2020, I mean, it was obvious that Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov was preparing for transfer of power to his son and preparing a place for himself after presidency, which would be head of the upper chamber of the parliament, this Halk Maslahati. So, and this time they said it's not good, like it's not good enough for Turkmenistan, and let's just abolish the bicameral and take out the Halk Maslahati out of the parliament and establish it as a separate body and call it supreme power body of the supreme power of the people. Why they did this? I mean, according to what we hear, this was done because Berdimuhamedov, the Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov, was not convinced that the project of Serdar Berdimuhamedov as the president was very successful. He was not happy with how things were done, especially with how Serdar was handling the situation within the family. And according to the sources, he was worried that Serdar might lose the power altogether, like lose the power from the hands of the Berdimuhamedov family, like wider Berdimuhamedov clan. Now that's why he decided that he would step in and take back the power. Although less than 1 year ago, he said that it was time to give way for younger generation to rule the country. So that's what happened. So now, during the same meeting, which lasted for about 4 or 5 hours, they made sweeping changes. Like first, it was when it was announced that there was an impression that they would take some time, like several months, to discuss the changes, but no, they did it during the one meeting, and they changed the constitution, changed the structure of power, and they also named Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov national leader of Turkmen people. So his official, full official name now is national leader Arkadak Gurban Guly Berdimuhamedov.
Okay, thank you. Luka, I'd like to get your thoughts on what this change is all about, what it means for Turkmenistan. But also, if you could, in your interpretation of these changes, does this make any difference in the way Turkmenistan is going to be governed?
I am not sure whether it will make substantive change. Whatever they've done to the institutionalized sort of infrastructure of the country, it clearly shows that there is a trend for constant deinstitutionalization of the country. Institutions no longer matter. The only thing that matters is the political power of the president, or the Benjamin Mohamedov family, let's call it like that, which is an indicator that the power was and is kind of personalistic. So in terms of how the power is distributed, I don't really see any difference in the sense that the power was in the family before this and stays in the power and will stay in the family even after this. So it is not a substantive change. But I think it gives an insight to the kind of relationship between father and son, doesn't it? It's obviously there must be an element of distrust in the way in which the former president looks at the current president, or maybe he wants to return, you know, in a very classic Central Asian fashion as the returning hero who solves the problem of the current administration. I am not really sure. I really don't want to speculate, but the indication that this gives to me, and mind you, this is not the first time it happens. I'm not sure how many times this monocameral, bicameral, Kalkmaschlachter, and all these kind of changes happen. It indicates that institutions no longer matter, have not mattered in a while, and all it matters is the power of what was once the elite and now is the family or the Bedi Mohamedovs.
It seems kind of elaborate, though, all the effort that went into this just to transfer power back to Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov. I mean, in theory, he could have just figured out a way to have himself return to the presidency for a number of reasons without having to change the whole institutions, though, right?
Well, it depends really in the way in which, how much you value the institutional framework of Turkmenistan. It depends on how much you believe that these institutions have any role to play. I mean, there is a general trend. I mean, I think that what we've seen in the last couple of years across the region, actually, is the process of authoritarian regeneration. You got Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. They are all trying to implement strategies to perpetuate their authoritarian power beyond the generation of leaders. I mean, you saw it in Kazakhstan with the Tokayev and Nazarbayev dualism. You saw it in Uzbekistan with the attempts to cancel term limits in Mirziyoyev's favor. And you now see it in Turkmenistan, where this constant change between who's more powerful with power as son actually indicates that there is this agenda of changing or perpetuating the power of the family. So it seemed to me that if we only look at the institutional aspect of this, we miss the point. What we should really investigate is the personal component of the power agenda driven towards this. I mean, what now? Why did Berdi Mohamedov Sr. did this now? I mean, is there an element of boredom? Was he bored just by being a representative figure? Could be. But I really don't understand this. And probably someone like Farouk, who got the better idea of what's going on, could illuminate on this, the timing of this move.
Yeah, and I do. In the second half of the show, I want to talk about some of the potential reasons why they had to do this. So we'll get to that. But Farouk, I wanted to ask you a question too. What is your service hearing about the reaction of the public in Turkmenistan? Do they understand what just happened? Do they care?
Surprisingly, they do. We've been receiving some feedback from the activists, conventional meaning, but like ordinary Turkmens who are not indifferent to what's happening. They were saying Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov just committed a coup because he just single-handedly took back power from his son. And I mean, not that they really do care in the sense that this will somehow change the situation in the country, this economic difficulties and corruption. So it's just the same thing, like father and son, they were the same thing. And they're saying that Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov just staging a circus, a political circus, like going back and forth. And they don't understand what's, the public also doesn't understand what's going on. And there are rumors that would sound wild in ordinary situation, but not in Turkmenistan, that Serdar was not happy with his role, and he was complaining that nothing, I mean, he cannot do anything because there's always a pressure from his father's presence. He was also frustrated with how things are, like how powerful are his father's sisters, like his aunts. That's why he made some rash movements against his powerful aunts. Like, well, he fired one of them from the position in the Red Crescent, and then he squeezed out his cousins and powerful husband of one of the aunts out of the Turkmen economy, depriving them of share in the Turkmen economy. So, of course, that created some tumult in within the family, and the father was not very happy, and he was not convinced that this project of transferring presidency to his son was successful at this point. That's why he decided to intervene by coming back and probably sort out everything. And we don't know what will happen. Like, it will be interesting to see what will happen from now on. Like, will Serdar stay on? Or like, will more of his power be taken away? And we were also hearing that Serdar was not very comfortable in foreign relations, like especially taking part in summits and in negotiations with all the generation of presidents in the region. So like, all of these circumstances piled up, and that's what happened last Saturday.
You know, I want to talk about some of the other amendments or changes that happened too before we get into deeper into the reasons for the change. There was Berdimuhamedov and his family got immunity, something like Kazakh President Nazarbayev used to have. Isn't this true?
Yes, like in the law, and they adopted the law during that meeting on the national leader, and the national leader himself and his family members, they get immunity and they get protection. But it was there already. Like, the president and the former presidents, according to the constitution, they already had it. But I think this wording, like the protection and the immunity, it was put in that law because there wasn't anything else to put there, like to give the law a little weight and legitimacy in the eyes of the public. Because I mean, who would doubt that any member of the Berdimuhamedov family is immune from the law inside Turkmenistan? And of course, like, if and when power goes away from Berdimuhamedov family, then this law will mean nothing. It will be gone within the day. Like, unlike in Kazakhstan, it took some time to abolish the law on Nazarbayev's immunity and his family's immunity. But in Turkmenistan, it will happen very quickly. So, I mean, that's my explanation. Like, this wording was put in the law to give it a weight and volume.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then, Luke, I got a question for you. You know, they gave him a new title. They gave Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov a new title, and he was already Arkadag. You know, what do you see as the purpose of naming him the national leader of the Turkmen people? Is this what is the symbolism that important? You know, he seems to be repeating what's happened in neighboring Central Asian countries. Actually,
I mean, I think that what we're seeing here, it's some kind of outward manifestation of who's really in charge. So obviously the lesson we learned from Kazakhstan, and I think that this lesson is being repeated here in the Turkmen context, is that the presidents of Central Asia are not really up for sharing power, either with their predecessors or with their successors. So there is this kind of incapability of sharing power with any other incumbent or predecessor, which, you know, it is a feature of personal power, widely defined. So I think that this change in the name, this change in the redistribution of power between legislative and executive, this change in institutional framework are all manifestation of some kind of power reassessment we've seen in the last few months. I mean, also, I think that there is an element of the moment of father not being entirely happy with the way in which things have gone. I mean, if we read the propaganda, of course, it's all fantastic, but you know, we go beyond that. We do. So there must have been some elements of, I know, as Farouk was saying before, the son, Bedimoyo Jr. engaged in some kind of complaint about how things are, or maybe there were some parts of the elite who were not entirely happy and expected more from him. But there is certain a dualism at the top of Turkmen politics. So it seems to me that these changes, which are otherwise inexplicable, because here we've seen institutional changes in a country where politics is totally deinstitutionalized. So if we just look at that, it makes no sense. If we start going deeper and we realize that there could be some kind of power struggle or some power disagreement between the two, then maybe this becomes a more explicable transformation.
Oh, good point. I like that. That's interesting. But we have reached the halfway point in our discussion, so it is time for me to remind that this is the Meclis Podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pinheiro, host of the Meclis and author of the weekly Central Asia and Focus newsletter. We're talking about the recent changes in the structure of the Turkmen government and how it allowed former President Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov to formally ascend to the top of the government again. Discussing this with me are Luka Ancheshi, professor of Central Asian Studies at Glasgow University and author of several books on Central Asia, including Turkmenistan's Foreign Policy, Positive Neutrality, and the Consolidation of the Turkmen Regime, and Faruk Yusupi, the head of RFARL's Turkmen service known locally as Asatlik. Okay, let's get into why. We've already been bouncing all around this, you know, but what exactly is prompting the changes? And as something, I'll throw out something too, that, you know, because of Russia's war on Ukraine, Turkmenistan has all of a sudden had people knocking at its door asking about natural gas for the first time in years, right? I mean, the Iranians have reached out to him. Turkey and Azerbaijan have been trying to work with Turkmenistan to get gas to Europe. China, when, you know, during the recent visit of Serdar at the start of this month to China, Xi Jinping also mentioned, you know, moving forward with Line D of the Turkmen gas pipeline network to China. So, you know, what are some of the reasons? And do you think that, you know, Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov deciding to return also has something to do with the fact that there's some major potential gas deals lying, you know, on the doorstep right at the moment? Start with you, Luka.
Well, again, I mean, the way in which the gas deal and the gas revenues in general are accounted for in the Turkmen budgetary system is completely non-transparent, which means that we don't know where the money goes. So we don't really need to have a change in the institutional framework to understand how the revenues would be accounted for. There still won't be in that sense. So it's not, I mean, the family will have unchallenged control over these revenues, regardless who's really in charge. I mean, it could be that elite pushed the former president to return and to more to the center stage in order to negotiate harder with the foreign parties. But we know that when it comes to gas negotiations, there is a lack of capacity in the Turkmen side, which just goes beyond, you know, it's a problem of 30 years. So it's not really that. I mean, I am not entirely sure, again, what's the connection between this and the gas, even because if you look at the amount, the range of laws that have been changed, they don't really, directly impact on this, on the gas, on energy and any sector, full stop. I'm also really skeptical about the possibility of, you know, exporting new direction in the short term. I don't think that the obstacles have been set by Serdar. They've been there for a long time. So marginalizing him, I don't think it will address the issue. So I think that it is there to stay. Maybe strengthening ties with China, yeah, that could be a way to go. But I am not sure we're going to see any Turkmen gas flowing westwards in the short time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Farouk, you know, you made the point earlier that Serdar might just be uncomfortable doing foreign negotiations. To some extent, we can understand that. When you're standing next to Xi Jinping, who's been in power a bit for a while and is starting a third term, when you're standing next to Vladimir Putin, who's been in for more than 20 years, meeting with, you know, Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Ilham Aliyev, both of whom have been in power for a long time, and all of whom are older, much significantly older than Serdar Berdimuhamedov. It's got to be a little intimidating. You think that was the reason, or is there more other reasons we should be looking at?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons. I mean, that's what we are told. I mean, we've been hearing this for several months now. He was, according to the sources, he was not very happy with his role, with his responsibilities, because there is always a shadow of his father. One of his frustrations was related to negotiating with foreign government. And interestingly, in the constitution, they made amendments, like the latest amendments stipulate that the president cannot give his responsibilities to other government officials, except several points in his job descriptions that he can delegate to the national leader, the chairperson of Halk Maslahati, which is of course his father. And one of those items is defining the foreign policy, negotiating with foreign governments, and conducting this foreign policy overall. And coming back to your question, with how things are changing in because of what's happening in the world, especially the war in Ukraine, it requires, because they, as you mentioned, people are coming knocking on the door of Turkmenistan asking for energy cooperation. It requires someone who can deal with this kind of situation and who can negotiate with foreign governments. And probably Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov decided that, I mean, it would be him that has to carry out that task. We've seen that during this less than 1 year, like 10 months since Serdar was elected, all the summits in Turkmenistan were attended by the father, Berdimuhamedov himself. And also, like, in one of the meetings, like important meetings in Uzbekistan in November, the Turkic Organization of Turkic Countries, in Samarkand, was attended by Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov himself, not Serdar. So it was obvious that Serdar was not comfortable in that field. So it was one of the reasons that Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov decided to come back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, and Luka, you suggested that there's something that we're not seeing, and certainly I agree with that. There's more going on behind the scenes than we are allowed to view at the moment. But I'm kind of curious, just so we can clarify, it seemed like a pretty seamless transition from father to son. And of course, many people did think that the father was still running the country. But domestically speaking, I haven't really seen any changes that would indicate that Serdar was doing anything different than his father. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think that, I mean, obviously, we need to simplify things when we talk to the general public. I think that when we looked at the transition, we always imagined like only two actors involved, the father and the son. Whereas it is important to acknowledge that there must have been a series of agreements, a series of pacts that were made between the family and the elite. So obviously the elite gave their consent to this kind of transition, unprecedented in Central Asia. And they must have been promised something in exchange. We don't know what this pact entailed. The only thing which we can sort of speculate on now is that maybe some of the terms were not respected. And then that's why you got a kind of backpedaling going on. I mean, in general terms, when you have any kind of transition from one system or to one power system to another, especially in authoritarian contexts like Turkmenistan, there are a series of backdoor agreements made between the elite. We don't know what they are. We can only imagine, speculate that these have not been fully respected. And it seemed to me that when we enlarge the horizon of our understanding of the transition of last February to a wider elite system, in wider, inverted commas, because the Turkmen elite is not that big in general terms. Well, we then start to realize that in order to have his son elevated to the presidency, Bernie Momenov's father must have given something to the other people who were supporting him. I mean, no one is able to run the country by themselves. This is not the age of Stalin, you know, late 30s, certainly not now. So it seems to me that it's only if we enlarge our sort of the number of actors involved, we then start to see that, you know, there could be something that went pear-shaped. So it's not that smooth in that sense.
Okay, thanks. And, you know, before we leave the topic of why the transfer happened, I just want to go through some of the other potentials. And Luca, you had actually mentioned he might, you know, the father might have just missed the job. Let's face it. Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov was not shy of the camera. In fact, he encouraged being filmed doing a number of things which could only be described as antics, I think, at this point. But he certainly seemed to relish being the center of attention. And as the Turkmen service, RF Aero's Turkmen service, reported, within hours practically of him assuming this new role, the posters of him were going on or being put up around the country again. His airtime on state television increased a lot. Do you think that there's probably a combination of elements here, but do you think that had a real big influence on his decision to come back to the center of power?
Well, you know, like the symbolism of having, you know, like the father and son represented, you know, like with the horses, one, you know, on the saddle and the other one standing, it clearly showed that they spend a lot of propagandistic sort of capital on making that happening. I am not sure what the expectation of the son were. I mean, this is, yes, to work hard. I mean, he was groomed for it. The Serdar has been taking few jobs, you know, local administration, deputy ministerial jobs, deputy prime ministerial jobs. So it is not something that he came out of the blue. This guy has been sort of groomed for this position. I mean, while I certainly don't dispute what Farouk has said, that there has been some kind of complaining from Farouk's side, from Serdar's side, I would say that there's something else here. Obviously, you know, we will never know. We'll always have to speculate, but I wouldn't discount the external pressure. Externally, you know, we're always within the elite into what happened. And I hope I addressed your question because, again, you were breaking up a bit.
Oh, yeah. That was good. Now, I was just, you know, you'd mentioned that Gurbanguly might have just missed the job being the head of state. That might have played some role.
There certainly is an element of boredom. Like, you are a super powerful president. I mean, what do you do with your time? I mean, you obviously don't do the day-by-day ruling on the country. You know, once you do a bit of DJing, a bit of driving, then you got to be bored even with that. And then you think that maybe retirement could work for you. And then you realize that you missed it and you come back. That's probably an explanation which I wouldn't really discount. I mean, more political psychology kind of thing. Everything could be in Turkmenistan. Unfortunately, nothing makes sense if we just stop at the surface of things. Going beyond, you know, the murkier side of rumors and gossip, I think that we're always right if we go there, unfortunately.
Great, thank you. And Farouk, if you could return to the topic of the problems within the family. You know, we know that Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov's sisters have always had great influence on him, and you had mentioned that Serdar has removed some of them from their, or at least taken them down a peg, removed one sister from her position, but also kind of tampering with the cousins' businesses. Can you tell us a little bit more about the inner family battle that's been going on, or at least the problems in the family?
Yeah, you are right that the sisters of Berdimuhamedov's sisters still have great influence on Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov. And after Serdar came, he was not happy. And according to rumors, again, like as Luca rightly said, that we can only operate on rumors in countries when dealing with countries like Turkmenistan. According to rumors, they had antagonistic relationships with his cousins. Serdar had this kind of antagonistic relationships with cousins from long time ago. So once he came to power, he started to squeeze them out, and he took over businesses. He put reportedly the cousins owned shopping malls across the country, restaurants. He took them over and put them on sale. He sent one of his aunt's husband to exile. That's Recepov. I forgot his name. Not the oldest aunt's, but the second oldest aunt's husband in exile to Dubai. He fired his aunt, Durnabat Dovletova, from the Red Crescent. And according to the sources, several hundred, up to $300 million of her interests were seized. So, and of course, those sisters would come to Gurbanguly and say, like, what's going on? Like, can you tame your son? So it was not a very pleasant moment for Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov. And I mean, who can fix the situation? Of course, he. I mean, he, and without taking a little more power, a little of the powers of from his son, he cannot do that. So that was one of the reasons, as I said, like all of these circumstances piled up and resulted in changing of power structure in Turkmenistan.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, and then this is the last question, and I'd like to hear from both of you on this. We have a change in the structure of government. Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov is back in power. How long do you see this structure being the structure of government? I mean, is the halk maslahati, do you see it lasting for as long as Berdimuhamedov wants to stay in power, or are we, in your opinion, are there more changes coming? Either Berdimuhamedov assumes another post, or goes back to being president or something like that. I mean, it was such a quick change, and Turkmenistan is such an unpredictable country. Should anyone have any faith that Berdimuhamedov will stay in power for 10 more years as the chairman of the Halk Maslahati, or do you think that this is a stage on the way to something else? Farouk, would you like to try that first?
Yeah, if Berdimuhamedov clan stays in power, Halk Maslahati will stay there as long as it serves the purposes of the family and Gurbanguly himself in the power. I mean, if he decides that he no longer needs it and it doesn't help him in staying power, he will invent something else. Like, we've seen it. I mean, we have to remember the history of this body. It was there something similar was there during the first president, and Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov himself abolished it in 2008 and made and established another body, which was called the Council of Elders, Yaşlılar Maslahatı, if you remember. And then this body lasted for 9 years, and in 2017, when he decided that he needs some different body, which with seemingly greater power for him to transfer the presidency to his son, he reestablished Halk Maslahati, and then he made it into he incorporated it into parliament, and then after he transferred the power, he now reestablished it as an old style Halk Maslahati. So he will do whatever to stay in power. Whatever, but he will establish new and invent new things that would serve his purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And Luca, same question. I'm thinking of sending Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov a birthday letter, birthday card for June. Should I start making it out right now to the chairman of the Halk Maslahati, or should I wait on that one?
No, I just call him Mr. President. After all, it's him who called the shots. Look, I mean, who can tell really what was going to happen? Again, Farouk was right. The institutional instability of Turkmenistan, monocameral parliament, two chambers, then this kind of, at one point, the Karakhmash Karakhti was like 2,500 people, which is obviously much easier to control than just a monocameral parliament. Traditional, traditional way of assembly for the Turkmen. We heard it all, really, we heard it all over 30 years. But again, if we just look at the institutions, I don't think that this makes sense. I think that we need to, so this is now a very family-based regime. This is no longer just the kind of personalistic, classic stuff that we see in Central Asia. I mean, this is like Nazarbayev on steroids, in that sense. With the first family, actually, it's the first family who has managed to complete a dynastic succession there. So if there is instability within the family, as Farouk was saying, there could be instability within the elite more widely. And in that sense, there could even be instability within the institutions. Unless this kind, whatever problems they have encountered will be addressed in the next few months, I don't really think that we've seen the end of this. If these assets, you know, if this kind of infrastructure that is established now actually works for addressing the problems that instigated the change to start with, then we may see a little bit more. But again, this is all done at the back of the political scene. I mean, again, the worst part of this is that we're discussing, you know, institutional politics, power play, possibly intra-family, intra-elite struggle. The reality is that whatever happens, the Turkmen people will have to endure few more decades of this family rule, which is hardly conducive to prosperity, well-being, and a proper respect of social and political rights. So if we're not sure who's the winner is between father and son, and maybe a couple of aunties as well, we certainly know who's the loser, and that's the Turkmen people, unfortunately.
Well, a realistic note to leave it on, a sad one also. But we are out of time. So thank you, Farouk and Luca, for joining me today to discuss this. And a big thanks to Nathan Shoemaker, our Meclis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Meclis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.